You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We're taping this show from our latest studio here in Permata Sapura in the heart of the KL Business District here at KLCC. We need to talk a little bit more about the great resignation of the big quit that's currently happening in the US, elsewhere as well. This is, of course, following the spike in the rate of resignation following the pandemic. And while we can explain many of the explanations surrounding the great resignation, we need to understand the impact of it, not just on the labor market, but of course, some of the impact that it has on the workers out there as well, including some of you, perhaps, watching this show. Here to unpack all of this is Alejandro Kikuchi, the head of Asia for the freelance platform Workana. How are you, Alejandro? Thanks again for coming over to this studio of ours. We just want to understand a little bit better about what is driving the great resignation, not just in the US, but of course in Malaysia as well.
Definitely, and we are seeing the same trend in many countries, not just the US, definitely. It's a sign of something that's been there for a while and the pandemic accelerated, which is this need for greater flexibility in many regards. People realize that, and this accelerated with the pandemic, that work is not necessarily somewhere they go to. It's something they do. And with remote work, they realize that they can avoid long commutes, they can avoid rigid schedules, and because of all of that, have a better quality of life. And my understanding is that that's precisely what people are looking for, this improvement in quality of life. And now it's been proven that it's possible to work remotely, to be very productive. And because of, and that's driving this great resignation.
You're painting the picture that they leave because of choice. Is there another reason why they're leaving? Is it because they're let go by the organization? Is it because of there's no more place for them? Companies retain productivity by not having them around any longer? Is there another element to this story?
Well, that's certainly one factor. And sadly, the pandemic is having also that effect on many businesses. But for the most part, this is a choice. Not only looking for this other quality or better quality of life, but also because now, on the other side of the coin, companies are more open to hiring remotely. Mm. So now people are not tied to working for a company just in the same city. They can work from companies in the region or other parts of the world. So then there's also more opportunities. So that combination, the need for better quality and more opportunities, drives this choice in resigning and looking for a different kind of work.
One of the bigger reasons why we want to understand this a little bit better is because this mostly impacts the service sector, not so much manufacturing. In my previous shows, manufacturing, of course, is picking up steam. There are some issues on global supply chain issues, of course, semiconductor shortages and all the other stuff. But generally speaking, Malaysia, 60% of our economy is driven by services. And of course, when we talk about freelance working and people working out of choice or in the flexibility of their home, it basically revolves around service. But within this sector, we can even split it even further. Not all services can be working out of home or any other flexibility out there. And so can you explain to us some of the ideas that revolve around the flexibility of freelancers, for instance? In which sector would it be most prominent, I suppose, as opposed to others?
Of course. So, and it definitely makes sense to limit this to the services sector. And within there, businesses or types of work that rely a lot on digital assets or that can be digitized is the key here. Because when something is digital, then it's also compatible to be done remotely for the most part. And perhaps even asynchronously, meaning not even need to be online at the same time for many of these, not all, but many of these kinds of jobs. So the kinds of work that involve a certain digital on one hand and then a certain degree of autonomy on the other hand are the ones that thrive in these cases.
Okay. We'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with Alejandro Kikuchi of Workana. Thanks for staying on. I have with me Alejandro of Workana. Alejandro, let's talk a little bit more about Workana itself. As I understand it, it is a freelance platform where you provide both ends of the services. You have people coming on the platform trying to look for jobs. Also, you're trying to get in touch with companies that want to hire. Is that how it works?
Precisely. We are a platform connecting these two parties, businesses needing projects done, basically, and the freelancers who can work on these projects.
So because of this, I guess you get the front seat in terms of trying to understand or make sense of the great resignation that's currently happening globally. What would be some of the key factors driving one particular area of application versus another? What kind of demand do you see is increasing? Specific jobs, maybe even.
Right. So what's interesting is the synergy that started happening. On one hand, because of the pandemic, we all had to stay at home. And then that meant many things turned digital. We have all these shops and restaurants all of a sudden have a digital presence. Mm. They did not have that in the past. Mm. Being digital creates all sorts of new necessities. If you are digital, you have data. If you have data, to make the most of that, you need people analyzing and working that data. If you have a social media presence, you may have customers asking questions or complaining about stuff in those social media channels. So now you need people replying and managing these social media channels. Mm. So these are just a couple of examples of how the pandemic drove digitization. And in turn, that creates jobs and opportunities for freelancers who can analyze the data, who can manage the social media channels, just to mention a couple. But that's how it's all related.
Because you look at the entire landscape of Asia, I'm sure some markets would have some peculiarities, or is it more of the same across the board?
Broadly speaking, it's the same, because the effects in the day-to-day lives of people were, in general, the same across the whole region. Mm-hmm. Some countries have a stronger side of things in terms of talent. So maybe some country is more well known for customer service people, and some other country more well known for software developers. Mm. But even those generalizations have that so many exceptions that don't really apply.
No, so I agree with you. Yeah, we can just say that, okay, so for instance, one country would be really good in customer service, but not generally so as well. In that sense, for Malaysia, where do you think our strengths are, and what areas are we lacking in terms of the strength of or the capability of the workers itself?
No, that's a great question. So we've been seeing in these few years of operating here, amazing talent in terms of design, for example, and that involves many subcategories, but that includes UX design and UI design, designing the workflow of a mobile app, for example, as well as digital marketing. And then on the other hand, when it comes to data science, for example, we are seeing a great surge in demand, and still the talent needing some development there.
You know, a few weeks ago, I moderated this event. It was called Selangor ASEAN Business Conference. It's a very generic name. It's being run by the Selangor government. On the panel, I had 5 CEOs. And what they say was very strange for me, because they said that, respective of their companies, they're finding it extremely hard to hire people, either freelance or full-time, in the areas of data science, making sense of the data. Data scientists possibly could be easy to be hired, but trying to match that with the requirements of the company is harder. Trying to put into practice the kind of lessons or learnings that comes from the data that is being garnered. They can't find talent, and they are now currently searching far and wide, trying to fill this particular gap. On the other hand, we have over 300,000 graduates coming in every year that do not have jobs. The data that was presented by DOSM, or the Department of Statistics, show that youth unemployment rate is actually quite high, in fact, one of the highest in recent memory. So because of this, I find that there's a strange mismatch into what we're training our youth and our young adults with what the market wants. Do you feel that this mismatch can be easily resolved, resolved in anytime soon, particularly when workers themselves upskill from what they learn from university, but you know, perhaps learn from elsewhere, trying to meet the requirements of the industry?
That's an amazing question. So on one hand, there may be some shortage of upskilling for the hard skills, in this case in data science. But at this point, what I would find perhaps more interesting in a way is to address the soft skills. There's enough boot camps, you know, courses and university programs to teach undergraduates data science and programming and all these STEM related topics. But then the soft skills, how to sell yourself in a job interview, how to scope a project, how to deal with a boss or a client, that's often overlooked, and it's as important. And on many cases, that's what's missing, not really the hard skills, but rather this other softer, harder to measure in a way side of things.
A few days ago, I tweeted something I tweeted saying things like STEM is important, science, technology, but what I find lacking, at least in the industry, is that soft skill element that you're talking about: creativity, human connection, empathy, not just with external stakeholders, but of course with internal stakeholders as well. These kind of elements, I mean, you don't learn a syllabus called human interrelationship, right, in school. There's no 101 on this one. And I feel that the more productive colleagues of mine are actually more empathetic. They're actually more, they have a higher listening skill compared to others. What I find jarring is that it is inherent. It is not trained. And I feel that these kind of skills must be trained at the very least if it's not inherent in you. Do you feel that this importance is actually understated in the current job market landscape?
I do. Particularly in what we do with freelancing and connecting the businesses and the freelancers, we more often than not hear that or see that problem or hear that complaint. Like, hey, this freelancer looks like he's great with the technical skills, but I'm struggling communicating, he's missing deadlines, failing to deliver on a certain scope. So all those other aspects, he can code, or he can design, or he can write copy, but all the other aspects of managing...
Being a professional.
That's a great way to put it. That's correct. Yeah. And as you said, there seems to be little or no syllabus revolving around those kinds of things.
Strange, right? Because that is the one that...
It's a huge need out there.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your working relationship with Pebaran Negeri Selangor Berhad, the Selangor Freelance Initiative. Tell us more about that.
Right. So, well, this is one of the areas we are covering with this initiative. The Selangor Freelance Initiative is a program to provide 5,000 Selangorians with, on one hand, trainings on all of these aspects. The modules cover organizing a project, discussing beforehand the project with a potential client, organizing their own time, all of these soft skills. We do not teach them to design or code, but we do teach them these things. Uh-huh. And then they are allowed into Workana, and there's a cash incentive involved. And additionally, at the end of the program, when they graduate, they have a profile in Workana with an enhanced profile, with which they should be able to, in turn, get more jobs via the platform. So it's about creating opportunities, basically, and higher employability.
The landscape that you're in, while interesting, you are faced with a few other competitors. I have had a conversation, few conversations actually, with a few other competitors of yours. Some of them have made their mark in the market, others haven't. In this space, how do you think Workana can actually excel compared to your peers in terms of getting market share, getting growth, getting revenue?
So on one hand, we, unlike some of the global biggest players globally, we are not necessarily about connecting clients in the US or Western Europe with freelancers in other countries and helping them find cheap labor, in a sense. We are rather more about growing at the regional level or even country level. So we found that because of time difference, number one, and also language and culture, it makes a lot of sense for businesses to work with freelancers in the same region. So if there's 1 or 2 hours of time difference, it's not too much. And if the culture and the language is similar, it's far more easy to overcome all of the inherent challenges that freelancing or working with a freelancer already has, like remotely, not being face-to-face and all of that. So we focus a lot at the regional level. And on top of that, with some of our medium to bigger clients, we provide them a managed solution. Many of these clients or companies need some help in making the most of these kinds of new kinds of work. Mm-hmm. We provide workshops, we provide assurances, a framework, so that these kinds of companies feel safer in trying these new ways.
And of course, taking with the point of view of the companies, when you have a full-time staff, you have a manager, you have a director that manages the managers, do you would imagine them having full control over the kind of productivity and output of the workers. What kind of assurances that you can share with your clients through this platform in terms of that productivity being high or at least being met? You're sharing some of the complaints coming in from the clients. So how do you, I guess, mitigate those kind of risks?
So on one hand, because of how we operate, there's assurances revolving around payment, for example, and payments are released to the talent only once they deliver. So okay. That's a simple enough solution, but there's no 50% in advance or anything like that.
Okay.
So that provides assurances.
But money is held in escrow? So that
money is held in escrow, that's correct.
All right, okay. So cash incentive would be a big motivator?
Definitely.
Okay.
And additionally, we curate the talent. We don't connect a client with a freelancer just like that. Freelancers, for merely joining Workana, need to go through a whole process, and not all of them are allowed into the platform. Through the Selangor Freelance Initiative, all of them are allowed, but in general, there's an algorithm, and some of them do not get allowed into the platform. Those that do need to go through a certain process to ensure a certain degree of quality. And those are some of the measures put in place in the platform. But on top of that, a freelancer is someone whose life, in a sense, depends on their reputation. Their name is their brand. And they get summoned to participate in a project because they can get it done in the time frame. They are the experts in that field. And once they are done, they leave. Because that level of commitment is not necessarily lower, it's different. And that also we've seen in all these years that also provides many assurances.
Mm-hmm. One more break before we conclude our conversation with Workana. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Alejandro Kikuchi, the head of Asia for Workana. We're entering an endemic phase. The Malacca state election is a scary concern for me because I would imagine cases would rise. And also, The Economist ran a nice article I just read this morning on why the COVID-19 will go away by 2022 in the form of just another illness. But it ended with a very interesting comment saying that this is both a win for humanity, but at the same time, a huge loss as well, meaning that we managed to contain COVID-19 because of the vaccines. But at the same time, this is just yet another reminder that another pandemic is just around the corner. Hmm. Do you feel that this great resignation will go on, at a very slower rate, or do you feel that it's going to be tapered off in light of the kind of expectations that we're going to get from a global health risk that might come around yet again, and it's sometime soon?
That's a great question. I think, in a way, I find it easier to foretell the mid to long term than the short one. I'm not sure what's going to happen in 2022, but I feel
you're the first guy that says that. All my guests tend to know something that will happen next year, but they don't know what's going to happen five years from now.
I find it impossible. 6 months ago, I did not know what would happen, you know. But that being said...
Nobody saw this would last for 2 years, right?
Precisely, yeah. Precisely. That being said, by 2024, 2026, something like that, what I think would end up happening is that this great resignation now, it's a shift. And slowly we'll go into a new phase of work in which we perhaps will no longer talk about great resignation, because we'll talk increasingly less about full-time, long-term jobs. I'm exaggerating a bit, but bear with me, right? I mean, these trends of people resigning, many of them are not resigning to be an employee somewhere else. Many of them are resigning to then work as freelancers or start their own micro businesses. And digitization and, in a way, the pandemic and remote work opens the doors for all of that. So it's a massive shift on the world of work, which will definitely not be done by next year, but 3 to 5 years from now should have matured enough into something.
Yeah, exactly. My final question to you is this, some business owners and some CEOs continue to give flexibility to their employees to either work from home or to come to the office or have some form of flexibility between the two. In fact, nearly most companies that I speak to have that kind of flexibility. When I ask them, do you see any changes to this kind of flexibility, none of them are willing to commit on a timeline. They're like, you know, as long as this works, it works. Everybody's focused on output these days, which should have been the case, I suppose, before this. You know, I remember, you know, my boss literally watched each and every single employee clock in at 8, and then only at 5 we can clock out. Right. It's just a strange place. It was a bank, by the way. I don't see that happening these days. I don't know. Maybe there's still have, you know, places like that still happens. But do you feel that this new work culture, in terms of giving flexibility, kind of dissuades people from being a freelancer and continue to earn a living 9-to-5 kind of thing? Or do you feel that this is just another segment? There's still plenty of room to grow when it comes to freelancers.
I feel there's still plenty of room to grow. We've been in touch with not only tech companies or small businesses, but also larger organizations in traditional industries sharing with us kind of what you were sharing a little bit earlier. Like, I'm having trouble finding talent, recruiting for certain positions. It's not that the talent is not there, it's not that they lack the soft skills, they just don't want to work permanently for that kind of organization or be tied to those kinds of dated practices of clocking in and clocking out at 8 and 5. So these organizations at some point will have to recalibrate and figure, well, if you still need to get these kinds of things done by these kinds of professionals, we need to recalibrate and think in a different way. We are seeing some organizations already doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking massive multinational corporations, which usually find it harder to make these changes. Mm-hmm. It's still happening. Others, maybe not yet, but the lack of talent is a serious threat to any business. So recalibrating becomes a necessity.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Alejandro. I will speak to you again, I suppose, 2 to 5 years from now to see if your premonition comes in. That was Alejandro Kikuchi, the head of Asia at Workana. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astro1.com, look for Notepad. You can also look for Workana on all our social platform sites as well as on our website. Thank you very much for joining us. We've been taping this interview at Permata Sapura. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.